now we are looking at another team project, the Southern Willamette Valley Groundwater Management Area, and Dr. Susanna Goldstein will be presenting next.
Thank you. Hello. We are looking at the question of, is it working? This specifically takes us to Oregon and the Southern Willamette Valley. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors of Dr. Jana Compton, as well as Dr. Renee Brooks at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the research lab. Alan Henning is also with EPA, but with Region 10. Donna Schmitz is one of our soil and water conservation districts of Benton County. And Audrey Eldridge is the newly retired groundwater management area coordinator. And before we go specifically to Oregon, I'd like to take a regional focus at Pacific Northwest nitrogen fertilizer inputs. So this is the US EPA's Enviro Atlas. And if you take your attention to the dark blue areas, this shows nitrogen inputs of over 24 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So we have areas highlighted with the Necklace of Idaho, the Yakima Valley in Washington State, and then we have high input areas in the northeastern parts of Oregon, as well as in the Willamette Valley. And bringing the focus down to Oregon, we have three state-designated groundwater management areas, which I'm going to call GWAMAs from now on. These are all due to nitrate contamination of groundwater. And I'm going to be focusing on the Southern Willamette Valley, GWAMA, which deals with Benton, Linn, and Lane counties. Now, this is a huge partnership. We're working on 15 commercial agricultural fields. And so from that, we have volunteer commercial farmers who do live in the area, allowing us to come onto their fields weekly. We have federal and state government agencies, and this project is mainly funded through an EPA regionally applied research, or RARE, grant, as well as monetary funding from the Oregon Department of Agriculture's fertilizer grant, and we have in-kind support for our water sample analysis from Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. Some three local soil and water conservation districts, Benton and the Upper Willamette, as well as the Linn Soil and Water Conservation Districts, also help provide soil sampling. And they vouched for us, for our farmers, and helped us build these relationships to allow us to begin monitoring. So today I'd like to talk a little bit about more about the details of the RARE project, where we've, for the last year and a half, been able to monitor nitrate levels below the root zone of these 15 commercial agricultural crops. Now we're comparing our data that we've collected from this current study with a similar study that was conducted by John Selker and Ross Penhaligon from Oregon State University in the 1990s, specifically in Lane County, which is only one county contained within the groundwater management area. And all of that nitrate data is being put into the USDA's Agricultural Policy and Environmental Extender Model, which is being calibrated to the Pacific Northwest that will be able to provide a tool to help farmers, managers, and conservation groups quantify the water quality benefits, the practices that they're either conducting or funding, and use that information to set priorities and eventually inform water quality trading. We're a long way off from that. We're going to come back to APEX at the end of the talk. Now, we're thinking, our hypothesis is that land management practices have changed from the 1990s study to today, so that we have a reduction in nitrate inputs to the soil surface based on the four R's of right source, right rate, right time, and right place. So we are assuming that we have reduced amounts of nitrogen inputs and thus reduced amounts of nitrate leaching. And how we're measuring all of this is from mostly with lysimeters. We have these large lysimeters from the 1990s studies. These are passive capillary lysimeters. They're a meter squared in area, and they have a wick that's spread out radially on top of the lysimeter. That's pressed into an undisturbed soil column. The wick equilibrates to the surrounding soil water tension, and they're constantly collecting water. We're sampling those monthly. And then at each site that we've gone back to and been able to find the PCAPs, those passive capillary lysimeters, a lot of them are still functioning. A lot of them have been farmed over, or the farmers weren't allowing us to come onto the land. But at the sites where we were able to relocate these lysimeters, we're still sampling some of those, but then we've also installed a minimum of 3 newer lysimeters at each site. So we have a total of 54 new lysimeters installed throughout the Guama, and each site has a minimum of 3. All of the lysimeters are sampled monthly to get volume-weighted averages, to get monthly nitrate concentrations below the root zone of each farm field. Now we're also taking isotopic measurements of deuterium and oxygen to do water source tracing. We're doing this with the lysimeter data. If we have enough volume, we're prioritizing the nitrate concentration runs. The isotope data is also is helpful with our very high-tech water sampler that's capturing irrigation and precipitation, basically a funnel on a stick. But then we're also coupling all of the ground data that we're getting with fairly intensive multiple times per year interviews with all of our growers. Remember, these guys are voluntarily allowing us on their land, and we're giving them quite a bit of data back, so they're generally fairly willing to participate and answer these questions. We're asking about fertilizer type, timing, and rate of application, as well as irrigation amount and tillage, especially with what type of equipment is being used. We've also installed some groundwater monitoring wells at a few of our sites. Most sites have soil moisture probes, and through Benton Soil and Water Conservation District, we've been able to do pre- and post-harvest soil sampling. Now, I'm going to show you 4 crop groupings for some of our results. There are over 220 different crops grown in the Guama. So this is not your corn and soybean kind of a place. And so what we tried to do at the beginning of the study was assess, based on percentage of acreage, the important crops that are grown within the groundwater management area today. One of those is wheat. We're going to go through these graphs and show the current results from our year and a half of data. Now we're showing concentration on the y-axis. This is nitrate in milligrams per liter. Note that the EPA human health standard for nitrate is 10 milligrams per liter. The solid lines with solid circles are our newer lysimeters. The open squares with dashed lines are the older PCAP lysimeters. The error bars are standard error. Now, the Willamette Valley is characterized by heavy rains in the wintertime with very dry summers. So these summer blank periods on some of our farm fields are no data. There's no water available. On a wheat field, they're not irrigating either. So now we're looking at nitrate concentration and comparing this to what was grown in the 1990s. We don't have a lot to compare it to in the 1990s, but we are seeing between the two time periods, there are similar application rates, and we are seeing relatively similar concentration rates as well. This is mostly because wheat is an extremely dialed-in crop. There's not a lot of insurance in terms of fertilizer that's put on at these crops or during these fields. Peppermint, we started the sampling period with one crop in the valley. This was a brand new peppermint crop. There's not a huge amount of acreage of peppermint in the Guama. However, in August of 2014, after the harvest, the farmer didn't like the development of this peppermint field, so he plowed it up and replanted it. Since we were about to go in and start our second year of sampling with, again, a brand new crop, and because of the high values, very high values we were seeing from our first year of sampling, we added another crop, and this time it's a 4-year-old mint crop, in 2015. The main thing to stand out with peppermint in the 1990s is there's a large amount of it being grown at this time. But since because of some economic drivers and then also the advent of verticillium wilt, which stays in the soil, we've had seen a great reduction in the amount of acreage grown of peppermint in the Guamer today. Concentrations are looking somewhat similar between today and the past. Now, row crops. We have a variety of row crops here. All of these are grown for seed. There's not a huge amount of concentration being shown. There's also not a ton of seasonal variability. Now, the row crops are also irrigated, just by the way, like the peppermint is. Row crops, again, notice that there are a huge amount of row crops grown in the 1990s. Now, these crops here are mostly for cannery crops, so your canned peas, your canned corn. However, in the 1990s, the local cannery, AgriPac, went out of business. And this was a huge shift that really changed the agricultural practices in the Guama, where you have a switch from row crops for cannery to mostly to grass seed. Most of the row crops grown today are seed crops. So we're seeing what you could say is an improvement in terms of nitrate concentrations below the root zone of row crops today. Now, grass seed is where most of the acreage within the Guama is today. We are seeing some relatively high values of concentration. In 2014, this perennial ryegrass was a brand new crop. And these perennial ryegrasses, I'd like you to keep in mind these two fields for our next talk, because we're going to kind of go into some of the hydrogeologic reasons as to why they might be very high. But in general, especially after looking at OSU soil tests done by OSU Extension, these results are extremely high. Again, there's not a lot of grass seed grown in the 1990s world of the Guama, but you can see why I separated out all of those graphs, because this looks like a nightmare. There's very high concentrations with grass seed that we're seeing so far. Very quick summary. Wheat, we're seeing things that are looking relatively similar to the 1990s concentrations, as well as the same thing with mint. Mint is also irrigated heavily. Row crops, the concentrations have greatly reduced in comparison to the past. This is probably because of the shift from cannery crops to seed crops. I didn't show you the blueberry and hazelnuts, or as they're known in Oregon, filberts, but we're seeing extremely low concentrations off of these fields and very similar to what has been seen in the past. And then grass seed is much higher today in the past. And all of this data is going into the agricultural policy and environmental extender model, which is being calibrated for the Pacific Northwest currently. Now, this model is using the 1990s data to calibrate APEX to the area, and then we're going to be using our current data to help validate the APEX model. And the ultimate goal is to be able to hand this to a farmer or for them to just be curious about, I want to plant this crop on this soil type next year, what can I expect my yield to be? What can I expect my nitrate leaching below the root zone to be? With that, we are on 7 different crop types and 7 different soil types as well throughout the Guama. And I'd really like to thank all the partnerships that we've established, especially the growing interest in the soil sampling or in the lysimeter project is really frequently I get stopped by farmers who say, I've seen you here every week for a year. What are you doing? And so through that, we've gotten a lot of increased interest when they figure out what we're doing and what we're giving back to the farmers who we're working with. They're asking how to get involved. So this growing interest is huge. We're currently developing rapid soil sampling methods to help incorporate these new growers because 54 lysimeters is kind of a lot to be sampling every week. So we're trying to do another method, do a quicker, simpler analysis. We've done water balance and are incorporating a nutrient balance as well. And we're also incorporating our stable isotope data to look at water source tracking. Some of these lysimeters within different fields or within the same field are sourcing different water. Sometimes they're dominated by precipitation, sometimes they're dominated by groundwater. This is all something that we're incorporating into our nitrate analysis. Thank you, guys. Very wide range. Absolutely. I don't have a good answer for you there. I know it's HUC-12 scale, but I can certainly look into that. They're generally done in dual applications in the spring and then also later in October. It depends on the weather, though, as well. Absolutely, yeah. We are incorporating the amount of volume collected each time and relating that to the concentration of leachate. So we're trying to not show you ridiculously high numbers for a very small amount of water. And these numbers are not groundwater, but they are water that has gone below the root zone. So it's not going to go back up. It can move laterally and it can go down. Absolutely. We have we have some people who are growing corn and then doing drilling in of grass seed after the corn is harvested. And then we have large deep rippers that can come through on different fields. This is all very site specific. Yeah. Well, we do in the sense of in the next talk, there's groundwater management or groundwater wells that are sampled quarterly. The study in the 1990s really kind of set the stage of, wow, there's a lot that's leaching through the crop root zone, and then Department of Environmental Quality started monitoring throughout this area with groundwater wells and domestic water wells. With irrigation water, it depends on the producer. And some of the producers they drive by and they say, well, the main question I ask all the time is, how often do you scout? Generally, it's every day, every other day. And it's usually a visual inspection of things look dry at the soil surface. There aren't a lot of soil moisture probes throughout and done with lots of producers. Producers aren't using a lot of soil moisture probes. So it ranges from a variety of people doing just a visual inspection to some people are using this Washington State University irrigation scheduler, which is an app you can use on your smartphone. You can plug in your crop specifics and they hook up to a local weather station. It's they're one that's based in Corvallis. And so that's another way people are scheduling their irrigation. But it's not very high tech in general. Not a lot of people are using the irrigation scheduler, say. Absolutely. Absolutely, especially with row crops and with peppermint. Yes. Yeah. I think that there is a component of that in APEX, and APEX is the more complex model behind the nutrient tracking tool, which is the user-friendly GUI. Thank you.